We're the white tip box you see in coffee shops. When you want to leave a tip and you get put that card machine in front of your face, you never know if that goes, first of all, directly to the staff, and second of all, where is it going? It's a black hole in some cases. Why don't we create a system where tips can be left for staff directly through a system like, say, example, Just Tip? The platform's gone live July 21. We've done just shy of 2 million transactions. We have 7,500 employees signed up, with about 360 merchants now live in Ireland and the UK, with a third country coming online before the summer. So yeah, it's been a hell of a journey.
How are you? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, two guests for the price of one. You're getting Kira and James, the co-founders of Just Tip. They started the business when they were just out of school, right at the start of the pandemic, and now they've processed over 2 million tipping transactions in Ireland alone. They are my rising star pick for season 18. Here's my chat with Kira and James.
Over the past 5 years in this podcast, I've spoken to loads of amazing Irish business who grew from one idea to become world-class companies able to compete with the very best on the international stage. And many of those started up and grew with the help of their local enterprise office. From starting or growing to becoming more sustainable or digitization, the local enterprise offices have everything to help make it happen for your business. And if there's one thing that entrepreneurs want, aside from more money, it's more time. The local enterprise offices want to give that back. Their supports for competitiveness and productivity can help your business save time, money, and energy. For them, it's all in a day's work. So if you want to give your business the gift of time, decreased costs, and lower electricity bills, then go to allinadayswork.ie, take 2 minutes to fill out the form, and let your local enterprise office handle the rest. If you've been listening for a while, you know Iconic Offices have been my partner for ages now. Working and recording out of their flexible workspaces has meant a huge deal to the success of this podcast. So it made perfect sense to partner up with them again for season 17, but to give you, my fellow entrepreneurs, a unique offer. Come work in the Iconic Office workspaces for free with no catches. Simply visit the link in the description below and enter Gary24 for a free day pass or a free day office pass. Enjoy.
Kira, James, welcome to the pod.
Thanks for having us.
How are you doing?
I'll be honest, this is our restart because we couldn't get a mic working. So there is the realities of podcasting. Welcome. It's brilliant to have you on. We were chatting beforehand about like co-founders and having many. Actually, haven't. I think it's been a handful. So it's great to have the two of you in the hot seat. Give me an overview of what you guys do.
Yes. So Just Tip is a contactless tipping platform built for hospitality. I mean, we now work in charity and micropayments as well. But essentially, we're built after COVID, lack of cash, and we've built a platform where you can now tip staff directly through e-payment. So it's kind of almost snowballed into a legislation-backed tax management platform for employers, as well as an e-payment tipping system for employees to earn more tips.
Yeah, and as we were chatting earlier outside, I was like, oh, it all kind of started to drop and make sense. So I think it's going to be a cool pod for people to understand it. James, describe it to me, because I think people recognize you, your brand and where you sit on the counter.
Yeah, there's obviously a very technical approach I can give you in terms of what we do and with micropayments, blah, blah, blah. We're the white tip box you see in coffee shops, tap the tip machines. So say thank you, leave a tip for something, thank you for the staff, and that's what we do. So that was our initial product that we launched in market in July 2021, and we've just launched our second product after 3 years of wanting, 3 months of building. That's kind of the way that entrepreneurship works, I guess, but yeah.
Wow, but you've done a lot. Like you've scaled rapidly, because like a lot of places I go, you're there. Like it's
very annoying.
It's brilliant though. Yeah, it's I remembered. I know where exactly where you are. How did this all start?
So I don't know if this is like most entrepreneurs' journeys or not, but like I was 19 years old, December 2020, and I was in a coffee shop. We were just allowed to sit back inside because COVID meant we could sit back inside, whatever lockdown that was, 18 or 19.
I think we've all lost track of that. I think we've all buried that deep down in the emotional box.
It becomes a blur in time, but I was inside the coffee shop and I wanted to leave a tip, and I got stuck with the same two problems as I have, as well as probably everybody else listening to it has. First of all, I wasn't carrying cash because look, COVID had meant that cash is now dead. And secondly, the same issue I guess everyone comes to is when you want to leave a tip and you get put that card machine in front of your face, you never know if that goes, first of all, directly to the staff. And second of all, where is it going? It's a black hole in some cases. So I guess it was more of a eureka moment. Why don't we create a system where tips can be left for staff directly through a system like, say, example, Just Tip. And that's where it's kind of unfolded from. So like, we're live since July 2021. So we went through, again, a period of building. A funny story, when we were building it, we have got competition, and it's great to recognize them as well, because they're amazing things. We were about 3 months into building a QR-based system, and then StrikePay launched. And that was an annoying day for both of us.
That was a wake-up call there.
Yeah, and like, and then I kind of sat down and said, well, why are we trying to build something that, I guess, probably, sorry, it is in the market right now. I sat down and I said to myself, let's go to the people who actually tip. So I went down to my nanny Kathleen in Kildare, and I said, Nanny, this is a white tipping machine. I said, what do you think you do with it? And there was a whole negotiation around, you know, what her bank card actually was. She thought it was a passport to go to the bank and say, can I have my money? But the reality was, there is money on your bank card. And then she just tapped her card off the machine, and that was kind of that quick tap, 3 second moment. And she, because she understood it, the demographic we're chasing are people who have money. Like, I'm a 23-year-old guy who talks a lot. I don't have a lot of money because I'm a broke founder. We're not the ones we're chasing. We're chasing people who actually have money. And that's really what we've got. So the platform's gone live July 21. We've done just shy of 2 million transactions. We have 7,500 employees signed up, with about 360 merchants now live in Ireland and the UK, with a third country coming online before the summer. So yeah, it's been a hell of a journey.
Bring me back to the 2 million transactions, by the way. That's huge. I think it's important to kind of, because sometimes when you see these things, you kind of like gloss over them.
I say it so many times a day. Like, it's just,
yeah. Like, when you said 2 million, I was like, whoa.
I had a customer and I said it to them a lot. I said, like, 2 million transactions. He says, you know, every time you say that, you grin. Just a small,
little smug grin. You need it, though. You need to celebrate that. Bring me back to that, though, when you were saying you're sitting in the coffee shop, because like, everyone has ideas all the day, all times. For me, I love exploring the 0 to 1 piece, because that's the bit that trips people up. Everyone has great ideas, but very few do the execution piece. Had you started multiple businesses before, or how did you even begin?
How did I start businesses before? No, like, I've always been kind of annoying, I guess. Like, I'm knocking on doors looking for things to do. And like, I've been working since I was 15, 16 as a Kira. So the 0 to 1 piece for me was literally just, I've always wanted to start a business. I've worked for employers who I wouldn't necessarily agree with what they do to a certain extent. So from our point of view, it was just literally, we started it. And it's just like when you go surfing, because I lived in Australia for 2 years, and we went surfing, and you just end up riding a wave, and you don't ever stop and think, should I stop? You kind of just keep going. And then you are where you are now 3 years later, like, and you're like, fair play, that was...
What was the motivation, though? Because, you know, to have an idea is one thing, but the motivation then go and start it, was it just natural? You're like, why would I not do that? Or for you, Kira, as well, like, what was the, because starting a business is a huge decision.
Yeah, I mean, I think James is the kind of person that's born to start a business like that. He came out like that. But for myself, yeah, I just thought it was a really good idea. And he came to me with the idea, and I'd worked in hospitality. So I just thought the idea was almost too much of an opportunity to pass up. And I think that's a huge part of entrepreneurship, is, you know, it's a skill as well as something you can be born with, is that, you know, seeing an opportunity and running with it. So we got a very small amount of money in to start a business, and we just went door to door. Like, we went door to door to every coffee shop in Dublin. I think we got about 80 no's before we got a yes. And, you know, then by the end of that day, we were like, oh, is this even a good idea? And then we just went out and did it again the next day. And
what stage did you do that at? Because that's interesting. And what stage did you go door to door?
I think we built a very shaky MVP of the platform. And then we went door to door to almost get feedback on it and to get people to trial it. And then James actually has a funny insight into the pricing and how that works as well. But we had built, because he was speaking about when StrikePay launched, so we'd actually built the hardware with the feedback already on board from places I'd worked before and a few places we'd gone door to door. So it was, keep the line moving. I don't want people stopping and scanning a QR code to leave a tip. So, I mean, we already had a bit of a USP going on there, and people were like, yeah, if you can sort this and you won't, you know, keep my line up. We were like, brilliant. So that's when he kind of went door to door, and then
I was sitting in Sandy. I was in Sandyford, and I'd just been to probably the 10th place where I was like, please take it for free. Just try it. I'll pay you to take it. And then it was another no. So then I sat on the wall, I was sitting outside, I think it was Zambrera. I think they're still there actually, yeah. And we were with a guy, so myself and Kira, there's a third guy that gave us a hand at the start, Tom O'Connor. And I said, Tom, fuck it, let's just do, just pay them, charge them. And then people actually started listening to us, and I was like, okay, let's charge them. And then
isn't human psychology fascinating?
Oh, it's just that it's really pissed me off because I lost phenomenal 3 weeks.
But it because it sounds right. Every, and I say this to all founders at the start, like I do a bit of teaching around early stage founders, and they all want to give it away for free or for no, or for like Fiverr. I'm
still
like
losing money.
No one's going to think that's worth anything. Yeah.
You also have the issue of then raising your prices later down the line.
Exactly, because they've sunk cost on zero. If you sunk cost, if you anchor on zero, everything is expensive.
So like our first customer is still has paid full price since day one and is still with us. And we've had like 3 issues in 3 years, like minor issues where like they spilled syrup on a plate, so we're going to change that. And that's more just making sure that they're happy with the brand. But from our point of view, yeah, that was an interesting day because I'll never forget. I sit on the wall and I just turned to them and I was like, just charge them, like, and then they go, yeah, why not?
You called me after that, and I was like, I don't think you should be charging them. Are you sure? And then, yeah,
it was a confidence in the brand thing. You know, we've put months at that stage into it, and it's kind of like, when you think back, why aren't we charging them?
Yeah,
my time isn't for free. This isn't a charity. We have to go and be able to make a living on the back of it. We're not doing this to be able to make everybody else happy. And again, that's another piece we learned, that we were trying to go, oh yeah, we'll do that for you in the criticism, but now we're like, this is what we do. We can make updates, but I've got to see enough people looking to do it. But the reality is you either take it or you don't. And that's qualified and unqualified lead.
I think if founders or aspiring founders especially listen to this, just listen to that 5 minutes and take that away. That is one of the most important lessons every founder has to get, because everyone makes the same mistake. It's wild because we think, oh, you know, we'll just get them to try it. But it's those two lessons of the sunk, of the fallacy of zero. And then you kind of go, and well, people don't value it. Like, you can't work for free. And it's an unsustainable model.
We never had the money. So like when we, like to kind of put in perspective, when we started this, again, it is a lot of money. We started with $5,000 from her parents and my parents, also my money and Kira's money as well, which was minimal at that stage. But from our point of view, it was literally, we never had money. So it was either we raise funds, which was incredibly hard to do at 19 years old, or actually it was 20 at that stage, or we just go and charge a customer, and they're your only two revenue sources, unless you get grant funding. And that's the exact same thing, in my opinion, as raising funding. It's getting money from an external source. That's really where we sat. It was give customers to give us money or get somebody else.
Yeah, sure. The first one, 7-8 months, I had two other jobs as well. I was working in a restaurant, and then I was also working in a news agent. So like, you just have to have that grit, but you have to value. Oh, I had a terrible spending habit. Other than that, you also have to value your own time.
A terrible spending habit. I love that.
Of my money, not other people's money.
It's
kind of
like that line from Conor McGregor. He has got an unhealthy obsession with spending money, but Kira had an unhealthy obsession with making money as well.
Yeah, I respect the graph, though. Three jobs ain't simple. I respect the graph. And you're doing market research, technically. So you
exactly.
No, at that stage, we had customers in Ireland. So like within a month, we had, in the first 2 or 3 weeks, we were processing $5,000 a week. And then we had customers in the UK organically within a month.
Organically. Wow.
They came to us through a WhatsApp group. That someone in Ireland had said, yeah, use those guys. And that was it.
So you obviously had gone, okay, there's the problem. We've got product market fit.
This turns into the next story I'm going to tell you about how we, so like we had such traction, such energy, such a lack of experience. Oh my God, such a lack of experience to kind of happen. Like in 2022, like on the end of 21, it was just all about race, get as fast as we can, market share. And when I look back at it now, like it's just,
yeah, it's easy. You look back on yourself and you're like,
whoa. Yeah, there's not sustainable. Like, so we raised like $100,000 at the end of 2021, and I thought that was cool, but it wasn't enough. So what I figured out was, this is a problem that was global, because like at that stage we had generated interest because of our age. We had TikToks at 100,000 views and things like that, and it was opportunity. Basically, people are ringing us from like Austin, Texas, and Australia, and like we're still getting these calls, but we're not servicing it. But from our point of view, I wanted to raise funding, but I needed a team with experience. And those who can't see me right now, I just did the, you know, experience. Yeah, air quotes.
I like you added that in. Yeah. And if you are listening, go to YouTube, because then you can see all the hand motions that he's making.
And I talk with my hands, it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, it does.
But no, we wanted to bring experience. So I went to a headhunter, and everyone else with experience on listening to this is laughing already. And I wanted to hire a COO to help me scale this. Because at that stage, look, Kira's 19, I was 20. We had the opportunity literally at our fingertips. The market was in the bull market stage. It was just throw money at startups that had any sort of opportunity. It was before the whole tap AI to your your domain and then get £1 million sort of thing. But yeah, that was the start of our downfall at that stage.
So you went to a headhunter. What happened next?
So I found what I thought was the right person for the job. And what came from that was we started this really high burn phase. So we had to go raise funding to do it. And I got caught in this like hamster wheel of just raise funding. And we brought 10 people on through this guy. So like, the team was up 12. Like, and we had people in America, which is hilarious.
So you've gone from what, 2 or 3 to 12?
2 or 3 and a burn of like 2K a month up to like a burn of 100.
Whoa, 2K to 100K.
Well, it was myself and Kira taking pretty much nothing because we always felt bad taking money out of the company, which is another story. But it was literally bringing on all these different people to help us. And again, more air quotes, bring experience to the team. So yeah, we ramped up and I guess built more traction. And my favorite articles are the ones is like, is Just Tip going to be the next unicorn? Maybe. And like we can get into what we're looking to do next to a certain extent after this. But at that stage, there was not a hope in hell we're going to be unicorn.
What were you trying to do when you brought this person on?
Offset for my lack of experience.
Yeah, especially when you're raising funding, like the lack of experience, bringing someone on can give investors a bit more security.
That's what I thought.
That's what we thought. But he obviously didn't bring any security or anything at all. But yeah, we're under pressure to, you know, add experience to the team. Because I mean, if you're putting your money into a team of 2 19-year-olds, you want someone to almost be steering them.
But like I just kind of thought we'd raise 100 grand. Every time I heard was just, oh no, no, no. Like even with Enterprise Ireland and the local Enterprise Board, who are brilliant. Sponsors.
Thanks for the free plug.
No problem at all. The mug's in front of me here. But we were too young, and I can see why they didn't come near us now is because we were all over the place. And that was just such an opportunity for someone to pounce on us because it was, we'll go to America, we'll go to Ireland. Like we went to America with 300 grand. This company's going out there with 20 million and they're getting burnt. So yeah, we went out, like I had a head of sales who made 0 sales for America. I had a CTO who like brought the tech down nearly. COO who did nothing. And I kind of, we won startup of the year. Tech excellence startup of the year. And I remember sitting there, I was like a James Bond moment, looking out over the balcony. And it wasn't like a James Bond mindset because I was like, they're gone. Next day, got rid of everyone. Because we're out of money.
I was going to say, how did you come to that decision? Because sometimes when you're so far in, you're like, we just got to see where this goes. So you're out of money.
Well, we were sitting in the car about a month before, because I never had an office. So myself, we lived literally out of my car going to install machines. And we were the only ones doing everything, which is even funnier. Like, and we had about 60K left in the bank. And I remember saying to Kira, we have two options. We get rid of everyone today, keep 60K in the bank, or we keep pushing. Because it was a mindset that, yeah, people were actually interested in us, but they could see through the bullshit pretty quickly. So it was kind of like, we get rid of everyone, keep 60K, and we actually have enough money to live and get through to the next phase, or we keep on the basis that we can raise the million or million and a half we were trying to raise, I can't remember that stage. And we decided to go for B, and yeah. We were sat in the car and we had the conversation. Mm-hmm. But every doubt in my mind, because I remember looking at this guy's LinkedIn page, I remember just like this one person who kind of we brought into the team really looked up to, and I was just like, I could just smell the bullshit after a while. Like supposedly ex-international rugby player, multi-millionaire, blah, 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 all those. And you're just thinking to yourself, and you look back, you're like, oh my God.
We were still the dream. Like, they, you know, he was like, we'll bring it, we'll make it this big. And, you know, as 2 19-year-olds, you're going to believe this person you brought on for experience. And then you kind of get blinded by it. Whereas looking back now, you're like, wait, how is that going to happen? Like,
I don't blame people, right? What I'm going to call the catalyst for this is all those stupid TikToks and Instagrams where you just see some bloke walking down a runway to a jet and he's a multi. It doesn't happen like that. And that's what I thought was going to happen, that we bring on the funding, bring on the team, and we just go.
I don't know if we can blame TikTok for all
no,
the mistakes.
No, I will. And you know what? I don't care.
You don't even have TikTok.
It's that mindset. It's that mindset of just like.
Spoken like a true marketer. Here.
But it's that sort of mindset of just like, it'll just happen. It doesn't. This is thousands of hours, blood, sweat, and like quite frankly, so many tears.
I think it's interesting though, and it's a really, I really appreciate you being so honest because that is sold a lot. It is kind of portrayed, and that's why I love having people on from different stages of the journey, you know, start, middle, and kind of like, hey, we've all met it. Because I think we've all met it. It's very hard to remember back. We were talking about, you know, earning minimum wage. It's very hard for certain people after a certain point to remember what that feels like. I think for founders as well, it's very hard to remember those days of like, we're going to install machines, we're living out of our car.
It's customer to customer.
Exactly. Whereas they're like, look, you got to raise money, you got to scale like this. And that playbook works at a certain point. If you install, like I heard a great quote the other day, if you put jet engine in a car, it just explodes. Mm. And I think that's a great analogy for a lot of early stage startups. They think they should inject them with all this fuel when in reality it can just blow it up.
Oh yeah.
So kind of, that's what was happening with you guys. So at what stage, so you went for B, how long more did that last?
As in when were we out of money?
As in, so you were sitting in the car, it was 60 I think grand.
Like, no, that was it. Like that, we were out of money basically the month after. And obviously I said I got rid of everyone. So like some of those were really hard, like a 21 and go people. Like there was two or three people on the team that I'm still in touch with now. Like they're just amazing people. And they were the ones that were actually keeping the brand at heart. There was one or two I really enjoyed. It was a really, really good day that day sometimes. But that said, they were contractors. I was able to get rid of them, and I was fortunate in that sense. We brought on a full governance team then after. So like we had a board put in place. It was myself, Kira, but a gentleman by the name of John Mould. So John, I don't know if you're listening to this. Thank you.
Tag him on LinkedIn.
Can't thank John Mould enough, because essentially we went through a contact that we had in Goldman, and they put us in touch with a guy called Ravi Chauhan, who runs a boutique advisory firm called Lyceum in the UK, and John was a senior advisor. So John is just semi-retired. He does what he wants to do, and he was able to, I guess, associate himself with the business because his sons had worked in hospitality. They weren't getting their tips, and he could see the value prop and what we were trying to create here.
That's what I was going to ask you, because you know, at that stage a lot of people would be like, oh, we blew it, we're just going to give up. Was it ever an option? Were you ever thinking
day,
like that?
Every day I wanted to go. Yeah. But like, it's just kind of like, yeah, you can have your tantrum and then go fix it, because you know, you messed up, go fix it. But you need to have the tears.
Yeah, 100%. I've never cried so much in my life. But I think that's it. Like, you want to give up, but like, I think true skills of an entrepreneur sometimes is that you don't. You're also thinking, okay, yeah, I want to give up because it's hard for me, but I mean, the people who are earning tips off the back of this, I don't want to take that off them. And then the people who put money in, I don't want to burn them.
Our initial investors were customers.
Like, yeah.
Jerry's Deli, literally across the green here. They're an investor in ours, and they put money in on the basis of me sitting there in a shirt going like, yeah, come on, we'll do 100 grand. And they trusted us. And like, he did say to me, he wrote the investment office and they went in, but
He's done well
in the back of it so far, but we got to realize that for him. But like, that's why we do it, is because those initial investors who are customers, and it came out of their pocket, and they're just people, they're not multimillionaires, but they had enough money and they trusted me with it, and that's what we got to get back. Plus our parents gave us that initial funding as well of like 5 grand each.
I think even if you're at very early stage and you want to give up and you haven't necessarily taken money off anyone, I mean, yeah, it's about bringing back value in yourself and your time, like that sweat equity you put into it. Mm. I mean, I think perseverance through it is probably the main thing as an entrepreneur. Like, I mean, I can barely add, like, when it comes to numbers, I'm terrible, which you would think.
We'll cut that bit out.
Yeah. Yeah. You think
fintech? She's not head of finance, but just state that right now.
No, yeah. In the marketing, it's okay. I think, yeah, value in your own time is just the pure grit of going and doing it.
100%. I agree with you 1,000%, because founders often don't. I'm like, oh, what's your day worth? What's your daily rate? They're like, I don't know. So then it's worthless, because you're putting in all the sweat equity and time, but we're running in different directions. Right now, by the way. What's that?
We're below minimum.
You know exactly what you're worth.
3-4 euro an hour. We're doing pro week.
You're higher, James.
See, I did not know that.
Yeah. Kira's like, wait, you're getting paid? Yeah. But I just love digging into this, because the mindset piece of founders is so interesting, because I think there's a lot to be learned from that stage of like, okay, we made this mistake, now here's how we're going to fix it. So what was your thought process? Bring me through the kind of the fixing process of like, okay, we're out of money, now what? Because you said you got intro to a few people. Yeah. What were you trying to think to do? Like, what were you like, right, the road out of this is what?
And I had to lean on John for that. Like, that was, we had like 100 grand plus in debt these guys just left us with. And it was just literally start, like what John got me to do is write out a list of all the problems and then just start going through them. Yeah. And what's actually funnier is like the debt that we had is actually nearly all paid off now. It's all been serviced and we're all good. But we were actually in a bigger position of power than we thought we were. Because like, these guys had 100 grand in debt with a startup on zero revenue, zero money left. And it was kind of like, you are going on this payment plan or you'll get nothing. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of realized, yeah, we get something. And they all, like, in fairness, all the creditors we had were all relationships that we had, like, really good people. So, like, they were happy to kind of let us get through the tunnel. Like, I look at all this as a tunnel. Because, like, that section of your life, it's like you go through the port tunnel, but the light's switched off and you're coming to a bend. You don't really know what's there. And you literally just put one foot in front of the other because you just can't tell what's going to happen next. Then we had shareholders who wanted their money back, which I don't know how they thought we were going to get the money back. We had the money and we were in debt. But yeah, it was just literally put one foot in front of the other and just lit, just, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can break down all these problems. So not easily, but I mean, you have debt. Okay, you need to almost work back from that in how are we going to restructure it? Who do we need to set up calls with? What can we afford? And if you break it down, it seems a lot more manageable as a person than, oh my God, what am I going to do? We have 100 grand in debt and you feel like, you know, you're suffocating. Whereas if you break down, okay, I have a call tomorrow with this person about restructuring this section. It's, you yeah. Break it down.
We go to all these fireside chats and it's gaslight. They're like, oh yeah, the first 5 years we did that. I'm like, mate, that was fucking Q1 22. And I'm like, that's brilliant. Yeah. Like, because we've gone through debt restructuring. We're at the point of liquidation. We've fired a whole team of people. We've done clean a house. We've been burnt by somebody, burnt by shareholders. Like, it's just hilarious. And you stand back and look at it all. And then, like, what's full circle is the people who, like, the investors who like the money back have actually reinvested. it goes full circle. And,
but ironically, unlike a lot of startups, you guys were trading, you were active, you were in customers, you had clearly hit some sort of product market fit. So was that kind of keeping you driving forward? Were you kind of like looking at the transactions going, okay, look, we're actually trading, we're making money, we're starting to get money in the door?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think that's probably what kept us going, as well as also I think it's a lot harder to, you know, justify restructuring debt and all this and that, going through those hard times when you don't have a product out there, when you still have to put money into building it. So I think that definitely saved us as well.
Yeah, like we speak about debt, like, you know, so that's probably the end of the conversation on debt, because it's that was one of the issues that we had. But like, we also had a lack of confidence from the shareholders, we had a lack of confidence, I guess, in ourselves at that stage, because it was just questioning everything I did. And that's where John and even his wife, Claire, like, they're still working for free for us. Like, Claire does all of our accounts. And they just literally put their arm around us and said, like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to solve it. And then, yeah, we got to the end of the year. We did 400% growth that year. So we went from 25,000 revenue to 100,000 revenue, reoccurring. And then Enterprise Ireland, we're the youngest HPSU client. So they committed to put in $250,000 on the back of, I guess, the round that came in earlier that year. And then also we had Pret A Manger Ireland come to us organically and Insomnia. And I was kind of like,
it's changing. It's like, this is the point in the movie where the music just starts to, you hear the music start to play up.
Oh, like, and the pressure and the stress. Like, I was in Warsaw and I said this previously, like, I was in the hotel room and I was after getting a fucking email from somebody looking for money and I just passed out. Like, I just gone. And I was just literally
collapsed.
Collapsed, yeah. I was just under so much pressure. And I stand back and look at it and, like, now, like, I don't do pressure now because that's a waste of time. Just look at dealing the problem. And again, it comes back to controllables and non-controllables. Like, if you can't control it, don't worry about it. Just try find the means and ways of getting around it. But, like, what you can control, just do.
I think your point there as well is, like, don't be afraid to ask for help when you need it, in terms of, like, I think the Irish startup community and business community, find the right people. Obviously, we spoke about that. But they will help you, and like, people want to help you, especially as young founders or any type of founders. Mm. Like, if you're in a tough spot, like, get advice, go out, ask people what they did, because you'd be so shocked as to how many people have been through it before you, and they're like, oh yeah, yeah, I'm like super successful now, but I did that last year. And you're like,
would you believe we don't have all the answers? At 19 especially, I didn't have, would you believe, because I'm still speechless about that.
You, like, definitely didn't believe it.
But you do seem like you lack a little bit of confidence, James. I'll give you a hug later. Sometimes I'm shocked. Someone said it to me last week. I was chatting to someone and they're like, oh, you know, I know a lot of people that go on your pod. I'm shocked at what they say, because they're like, they've said it to me in confidence, but they'll say it on your podcast. I'm like, people are genuinely 80-20 people, 80% of the time mean good. They will help. They're honest. They're transparent. I think it's when you pretend to kind of know, and you pretend that confidence, it always catches up with you. I've done in the past. I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, it's fine. I'm like, oh no, I have no idea how that works. Whereas if you just go, no, I don't know what that means. What does it mean? They'll go, oh well, it's pretty simple to break it down, because people want to help. Like, people are inherently good. You do get the odd bad apple, But people those. Inherently want to help. You need
that, because then like every bad apple you have makes you realize that the rest of the apples are nicer tasting.
Exactly.
When we were at that, like in 2022, because that's what we call it. We call it 2022. And actually, end it was even funnier. Like that end.
I love how you say it like it was like 100 years ago.
2012, like yeah. End of
back
the
in the glory, back oh, in the hard old days of 22.
Even how it ended, I had a relationship end at the end of it. Like it was just like, it wrote off the year week before Christmas. And I just said, right, that's it, draw a line there. But like even, yeah. I remember summer and I met Luke Mackey, Yonder Coda now, and like it's just, as Kira said, that startup community in Ireland is amazing.
Yeah,
because everyone's been through something. And what I love about entrepreneurship is everyone's so embarrassed, first of all, about saying their issues, because like I have no problem saying it. Like that's what we do. People go through stuff, and if you've gone through your whole career without mistakes, was it really an exciting career? Did you actually learn anything? But like Luke was able to just again put an arm around me, give me a hand, and again, he didn't give me the money I needed. he was able to say, look, this is, because he had similar stuff as well with his stuff. And he said, do this and do this. And again, it's the same. If two or three people start saying the same thing.
Really quick break to thank today's sponsor. If you've been inspired by listening to The Amazing Business Person and either want to start your own business or supercharge an existing one, then the Local Enterprise Office has something for you. Whether you want to improve your online presence, become more sustainable, get into new markets, or just get that idea off the ground, they have the support for you. For more information, check out your local enterprise office on localenterprise.ie and see how they can help your business today. Now, back to the episode.
Generally, it's right.
Yeah.
And that's another piece, like, because this guy that we had as a COO, three or four people had said it to me at that stage, and I was kind of like, okay, decision made, he's gone.
Yeah.
And it was before that, I was kind of, well, we'll try it. We need him for the round of funding. We need him.
Well, you always think your problem's unique. Yeah. We all think we're special and we have this unique business and, oh, I'm a unique person and blah, blah, blah. Everyone's had the problem 100 times before. Yeah. A variation of. When I do, I can do like round tables with entrepreneurs. I always, the format is the same. Introduce yourself, one line about the company, and tell me a problem you have. And then we all just solve the problem. And it's amazing. Because then all you need is one or two people to open up and go, we have a massive problem getting into the UK. We cannot figure this out at all, or we're running out of money, or whatever it is. And the more honest and transparent people are, it suddenly creates this ripple effect around the table. Of it. I was like, oh, actually, we've a huge issue as well.
It's like when you go meet with some customers and you're like, okay, let's spend, I actually said this to someone because I don't really care. It's funny. Like you walk in the door, right, we have an hour meeting. Let's do 25 minutes of therapy and we'll all talk about our problems and then we'll get into the sales pitch. And so they just laugh at me. Like, it's actually true. You kind of give out about the PRSI charges and they give out about this. And you're like, yeah, I'm here to listen. I'm here to help. And then you kind of go, well, there's just tip. Again, more hand gestures.
Or you're saying, you're giving the problem. What the problem? Oh, the problems are bad, but here's the solution. Everyone,
like in business,
classic sales.
You know, everyone gives out about everything. So like landlords, ourselves, that we should be doing a chipping, shouldn't be coming to Ireland and blah, blah, blah. It's really hard starting a business. It's really hard running a business. It's really hard. And the reality is when you do meet business owners, you generally have a chat about how hard it is and a little bit of a group therapy session.
I think being an entrepreneur is like, can be very lonely and you can feel very alone in all your problems. So sharing with other people who are in the same space, it makes sense logically, even though sometimes you can't see that when you're in it.
How did you handle the stress piece, Kira?
Not very well, to be honest. James is actually a lot better at it than I was, but
that says a lot.
Yeah, and he collapsed. So yeah, I kind of just threw myself into it and very much detached myself from it, because at the start, you're very much emotional about your business. You're like, this is my baby. And then you kind of, when you're in the trenches, you have to detach yourself from it sometimes and be like, if I'm emotionally invested in every negative email we get, I'm going to spend the whole day crying and don't want to do that. But I think I was lucky to have a co-founder, because I think going forward, I could do it alone, but I don't think at that time I would have been able to do it alone. So to any solo founders out there, you know, props to you. But because we were able to lean on each other a lot in these scenarios. You do feel a bit less alone with the pressure, as well as you can be like, okay,
we know each other years.
Exactly. Yeah, we know each other a while and can be like, this email has just come in and you have someone to ring about it straight away. And you're not just sat there and you're kind of like, what am I gonna do? So I think that really helped me anyways, having a co-founder. And you're incredibly calm with stress. I think that's why it probably affected your body so much, because you were just keeping it in. But that's how I handled it, kind of with James, and then a good few years as well.
Okay. And then talk to me about tipping, because I think post-COVID, it's a different world from how I interact anyway. Everything's digital now. I don't carry cash anymore.
Yeah.
How has that impacted tipping and kind of like the hospitality sector?
Yeah, like I think to put it in perspective, there's a study done by Stanford which says there's about 58 billion tipped every year in the States. And that's money that's traced. You can probably up that number for, you know, cash payments generally in some cases can be quite grey. So in terms of tipping, everyone says Ireland isn't a tipping culture, yet the average bill puts on 10%. So when you want to value what market we're chasing, in Ireland, the UK, you know, hospitality is worth anywhere from 60 to 80 billion and 10% of that is tips. So like, that's really what we look to chase. So I think the Irish are kind of funny in the sense that actually probably the English as well and the UK itself, we don't tip necessarily, well, we do want to tip because we want to give back to the person, but it's generally a little bit out of, you know, that card functions like 10, 20, 30, 40. I think in that case, it's not wanting to give back. It's kind of that peer pressure of, oh no, what happens if I don't click no and then I'll click 20.
Well, they hand you the machine and they're just standing there looking at you.
Yeah,
and you're like
staring into their eyes.
Do I press no and then they can see me press no?
I love doing it. I love clicking no. Because
the irony.
It's not just tip. Yeah. There's no transparency. I refuse 100%. To give the money to AIB.
I also think that in that industry, it's like there's such a huge staff turnover and tips are so important in that industry for staff. So I think for Ireland now, they're more turning more towards tipping, you know, to keep their staff. And it's now actually becoming important.
Give me an idiot's guide to tipping. Like, how does it work? When I tip in a restaurant or a cafe, what happens?
So with just tip or without just tip?
Do both, actually.
Oh, you can do both. Yeah.
Do both. So without just tip, the old way to do it was through a Visa machine. You just leave the tip, you add it onto the bill, however you do it through the card machine. Basically, that tip gets dumped into your business bank account with the income you've made from that transaction. And then it's up to you as a business owner to separate that out and pay it to your staff. So basically, with new legislation that came in December 2022, you now have to have end-to-end transactions reports on everything that is tipped through your system, all tips that go through your system. So not only do you have to pay an accountant to separate it and pay it out to your staff based on however you want to split it, but you also are now liable for 11.8% PRSI on every euro tipped through your system.
And to put that in perspective, like if you're a business that's doing, most restaurants do between 500,000 and 1 million a year. And if you're saying your average tip is 10%, just for round numbers sake, mm-hmm. you're looking at paying 5 to 10 grand roughly in tax that doesn't need to be paid, because by using just tip, the tip goes outside the business, goes from the customer through us directly to each individual employee's bank account, split once a week by the hours they work. And we've built a significantly complex system on that payout side. But that's really how we work. So we bypass that piece for the business. We bring them fully in line with legislation because we've got end-to-end transaction reports. And from that, the business never has to worry about tips again.
That makes a lot of sense. I never really understood, because when the Visa machine comes to you, you're like, yeah, 10%. But I never really understood where it went then. Because I'm like, how does that go to the actual person? I never understood how the actual person is who served me and give great service. I never understood how they got that.
You remember
back.
The Ivy? Literally again around the corner.
I wasn't going to mention the name, but yeah, sure.
Yeah, but like we use like that.
It's
is
in
only,
the paper. It's okay.
It's out in the public domain. We won't pick anybody else out. But like that's a very clear example of a system like Just Tip was needed, because yeah, the tip went through the card machine and the customer was rightfully wanting to give a really good tip to the people because it's a high end restaurant, and it never went to the staff. So like. That's where our chair came in, John. So like he again wanted to join the business because his kids worked in hospitality and they weren't getting their tips. He could see the reality around this is a massive market and the opportunity is there. So that's really how tipping works nowadays. Yeah. Is the old way, which again we combat every day, and people are still going and say if your bill is 100 euro and they're leaving a 10 euro tip. In some places they're going to the till and taking out 10 euro, which is like that's avoidance of tax. That's a massive liability to your business. But by using just tip, yeah, it does bring businesses in line with legislation. It does mean there's taxable on tips, but tips are always going to be taxable. It's a reality most people don't actually understand.
Is cash declining now? Because anecdotally, I would imagine it is.
Yeah. It's not that it's declining. If anything, it's come back a small bit, but it'll never, ever get to the peak it was at before COVID. So like the reality is we say take cash if you're running a cash, that's with you. But in most cases now we're seeing kind of an 80-20 split, 90-10 split between cards being 90-80 and then cash the other way around. And it's generally like, you know, I'm 23. I still go down to my grandparents and Nanny just throw a tenner in my hand and that's kind of it. But that's, it's not necessarily a mass circulation thing. And as you mentioned before, a lot of our customers are cashless. So like they don't take cash anymore because there's a cost attached to having to put money in the till. First of all, second of all, get G4S to come in and take it out. And there's a whole management side that we, most people see a till. They don't think of that sort of stuff. It's the same with your piece around the tip. You don't actually see that we pay it out to thousands of employees every week. Again, that's what we work off.
Yeah, I think there's a value proposition for, you know, the everyday consumer who's leaving the tip, but there's also a value proposition for the employer that people don't necessarily see unless, you know, we're pitching to them or we're trying to sell them the system. But for example, my dad, he's a taxi driver, and that would have been a huge, basically 90% cash before COVID. Like, he would, I don't think he ever used his bank account. Like, ever.
But you always got in a taxi and they're like, oh, card machine's broken. Yeah. You're like, I bet it is. I bet it's broken.
There's an ATM right here, though.
Yeah, exactly. But I had to, for Christmas, get him a little card reader because he needed it now. And it's basically all he uses. He still doesn't know the login. I still have to send it to him every day, but still. Yeah, so there's a huge shift post-COVID away from cash, especially in places that were
but basically all cash. The convenience now of just being able to have direct access to your funds, not having to go to an ATM or speak to a teller. And that's the people pay for convenience. I love that line. It's like, I pay like Apple's paying, you know, at Apple Pay. And it's kind of that logic. And again, it has increased consumer spending. Like in the States, your drunken sailor reports are higher because if you look at 10 years ago, people were, it's more cost conscious around cash because you're having to give something over, whereas you just double tap an Apple or a Google Pay or Android Pay is that you tap your card and walk away. So yeah, that's what we've kind of gone after. And some people like tipping, some people don't. My feedback to that is just don't tip if you don't tip.
It comes back to good service, right?
Oh no,
you're paying for something. It isn't just like when you go and order coffee and you know, they don't. I was in a coffee shop. I won't name them. I won't drop them. Like the Ivy. But it was a local coffee shop near where I live, and it was Sunday and it was empty. I was the only person there. I went in, Maricano, and your mum was having a conversation behind the coffee dock with the person on the till. Having the conversation. He makes the coffee and I'm just standing there. And he does the thing I hate, where he's looking, he's having the conversation. He doesn't look. He just slides the coffee over the counter. And I was like, I'm never coming here again. Because it was just so poor. Like, didn't even break. I'm not like, oh, Americano, sir. Not like that, but just like, just not even just to stop. And it was a personal conversation they were having. I'm like, now I feel awkward and uncomfortable.
I feel like you come into their house.
Honest to God. And they continued the whole conversation the entire 45 minutes I was there to do a bit of work. And I was like, this is so uncomfortable. Yeah. Like literally speed drinking the coffee to get out of there. Because I felt like it was in their kitchen. I felt like it was in their kitchen. And it, you know, you're kind of looking at service like that and you're kind of going, lads, this won't survive. Mm. Like you're kind of going, this place won't survive. Because I came back to my wife and I said after, I was like, that place will be gone in 6 months. Because people now, you know, they don't mind tipping for good service, but equally, I think people are more kind of going, that's just not good.
Yeah. And the point I was trying to make about was like, we get our TikToks and they're so funny because people have like comment wars. Tipping should never be in Ireland. And I absolutely love them because I'm just like, just don't tip them. Yeah. It's really simple. Like it's a really simple reality. Don't bring tipping to Ireland. Don't bring the American culture in here and blah, 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 blah. Just don't tip. It's pretty simple. Like.
Yeah, I think it is. Like, and
no one's forcing you.
You got to make people feel something, right? Make them love you, make them hate you, but make them feel something.
Those comments push our views up significantly.
Oh, yeah.
The thing is, people will fight back. They'll be like, oh, you don't work in the hospitality industry, so shut up. You're just like, okay.
100% though. It genuinely, like, oh.
Yeah, it's madness.
TikTok is a dangerous place.
Yeah, it really
just
is.
The comments are just not good. You just have to like post it and ghost it. Don't even think about it.
But the whole piece of Kira said before, as you evolve as an entrepreneur, especially as a first-time founder, you get so attached to your business and your brand and you're like, you take that comment personally. Whereas now I'm just laughing at it. Like, I just look at these profiles, you're like, who cares?
Yeah. User 777777 doesn't like the pod. Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't like the pod, user 77, well, but you still watch all the clips and comment.
I'll wrap it up now, I won't bother. Just.
Yeah, oh, sorry. Yeah. Oh, really? You're right. That's good feedback. Who's this guy?
You know? Constructive feedback, yeah.
Yeah, it's wild. So where does this go then? How do you guys make money?
Yeah.
You take that one. You're the
I love it. Look at Kira going, Kira, how do we make money?
So we have competition, obviously, in the market. It's kind of evolved. Like the tipping space and the donation space and the micropayment space has evolved quite quickly. So we've built our structure around... One of our sales guys is either speaking or walking into the shop. We want the employee to be able to give the sales pitch back to the employer. €45 a month, 5%. That's it. Very simple model. And there is competition who... I'm answering the question.
You had your chance and you didn't take it.
We have competition, but again, it's all like hidden fees, extra as add-ons. But from our point of view, it's simple. And I want the employee to be able to go and sell that. And like we're amassing hundreds of employers. We're amassing thousands of staff. Because we're paying out to each of their bank account once a week. And again, it gives a massive opportunity. Like we're building a network. Like I spoke to the guys in Squid recently, 400,000 users. that network is so powerful. Like, we have 7,500 employees. That's really the value in Just Tip. We're creating an ecosystem where payments are being made transparently and equitably. But on the other side, there's an opportunity to make sure that we're bringing that through end to end. So I guess that's a little snippet of what we're looking to do next. But from our point of view, it's the value for us, obviously, is generating revenue. That's why we survived the storm in 22. But the reality for us is we're creating a massive network and we're helping people. I got clapped into a coffee shop. Kira says it's because we're bringing Just Tip in. It's not. It's because I was walking in the door.
Well, how would they know who you were?
He's pretty sure. Like, yeah. I got clapped in. Oh, they're like, hold on. He's here.
It's James. Hold on, guys.
Ridiculous.
It's like Leinster walking out.
It's an easy sell, though, because, I mean, you can literally go in and be like, it's €45 a month for us to sort everything, or it's €45 an hour for your account to split these tips, which will take them about 6 hours a month minimum. So,
see, there's the quote we're looking for, James. There's the line we were looking for.
See, it's all about you.
Co-founders, it's team effort.
Yeah. Keep each other in check as well. I like that. Yeah. So, like, does this scale beyond Ireland?
Yeah, so it already has. So we're in the UK with a number of merchants over there. We're scaling up over there. We have had interest probably from every corner of the globe at this stage. So, like, America, Australia, Germany, France, Spain. Like, again, yeah, there's legislation backing us here, and yeah, there's a tax piece here. But don't forget, this is, as Kira said, 4 or 5 hours work of taking money out of revenue, putting it into payroll, adding it. Basically, you did 20 hours, I did 5, and Kira did 50, paying it out based on that sort of hour rate. There's a cost attached to that as well, plus a complete nightmare of all the staff saying, well, why did I get 20 when I should have got 30? So, like, we're scaling into a third country now. I'm not going to say where, but there's a third country going to come online before the end of the summer, somewhere in Europe as well. So, like, this has an opportunity to scale globally on the tipping side. But if you walk around the corner to St. Stephen's Green Toilets, we do the processing there. And if you're into Cork, for some reason, they just love Just Tip in Cork. But we're like,
my family's from Cork.
We'd be huge Cork listenership. So shout out to Cork. We're going there next. We're going there in May for a live pod as well. So it'd be really cool.
Like, we've got Cork Arc, Cork Simon. Again, they're doing it through another company. CUH, Cork University Hospital, for donations. So, like, you know, it's where, when we were going through that piece in 2022, is how do we generate revenue without having to change the system? So we were onboarding charities through our tipping system and creating their employees, again, more air quotes, was just your payee account, and we paid it directly out from the charities there. And again, it's all about creating a transaction, as Kira mentioned, where you don't let the line stop moving. Again, quick 3-second transaction, walk away. And that's really what we've created value in. So this is global in that sense, because look at the micropayment market. Anything under your contactless limit is considered micropayment, in my opinion. That's what we're chasing. It's under €50 transactions in the UK, under £100.
Yeah, so you can imagine, do you remember going out in Grafton Street and those people with the buckets would stop you and you'd run away with your headphones on? Well, now they'll have the Just Tip running at you.
So you can run away with your headphones on.
So you can't say you don't have any cash. You
have buskers started using this? Like, could this be used for buskers and things like that?
Yeah, like, we're B2B in that sense. Yeah. So we're more focused on creating value for businesses. There is other side to buskers. Yeah, there's other companies that do that. But from our point of view, we're focused on business for now. There's an opportunity, obviously, with buskers, but we've got an inherent cost attached to these devices. And I can't necessarily just kind of give them out. Plus, I feel it'll be too expensive for buskers to take on, like, the long-term value of the LTV for these things. It's basically, again, we're focused on the business, creating value from the employees, and kind of that's where we're going.
Talk to me about co-founders. How do you work well together? Because clearly there's a good, great chemistry between you. How do you, like, work? Because I'm always kind of curious about the dynamic and just the processes of co-founders.
I think we could bring it back to the start. Like, so myself and Kira met probably like first year, second year, was it? A long time ago. I've been annoying you for a while. We're just really good friends to start off with. I think you hear a lot of all these co-founders who meet in college and they start a business. Like, we had a whole foundation basically of years of friendship. Like, we're best friends, and that's kind of the first foundation from it. And that's why when we do, like, those issues in 2022 were caused by me, not by her. Like, I brought the team on. I was pushing for a bigger, I was trying to drive forward.
I hate when you say that, because we both made the decision. You don't blame yourself for it. But I also think we're like chalk and cheese. Like, we have very different skill sets. We bring very different things to the table. So, I mean, if I was arguing with you about finance all the time, I can see how that relationship would break down.
Whereas, conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas, like, we have very complementing skill sets, and we work on things together in a very good way. But I also think, I mean, if it's for any relationship, but especially in business, is conflict resolution. Like, we've learned a very good and calm way to resolve any conflicts that do arise, especially within the business. So
how do you do that?
Do you want to describe the events this morning? I was stuck in traffic, right? So Jenna takes about 20 minutes to get to work. It took me an hour and a half. I was under pressure to get a couple of emails out because we're in Grange Gorman, hence why I was late for this.
I wasn't going to call you out. I was going to make a big deal about it.
Your scrambled eggs.
Yeah, I had breakfast as well. But I didn't think it was going to be a crash. But Kira rang me. I said, I'll see you there. Goodbye. And she texted me, never speak to me like that. See you there.
Yeah, I knew I knew it was under pressure, though. I was just like, yeah, I know. I know you're under pressure. So I'm not like angry about it or anything. Because it's not like malicious, just thoughtless. But we do have a very good way of, you know, if we disagree on something that's a big decision, we just break it down into what we want to achieve and is there compromises we can make and what's best for the business as opposed to what who's wrong or right in that way. And we do a very good conflict resolution, which is probably the reason we got through the storm of 2022.
But that took years. Here. Like there was obviously being friends and there wasn't much strain on that. Like we're just friend groups or crossovers. Like, but the reality is when you go into business together, and then you're starting to deal with money and like OPM, other people's money. We have to relearn, I guess, mm-hmm. around how we deal with these things. And again, trust is everything because when you do go through a significant period, regardless if it's good or bad, you got to trust in the other person as much as possible. Mm-hmm. So like I'd do anything for you. Like, and that's hopefully the same for you. But like the reality is that trust in Kira needs to be there 24/7 so that, you know, if you do bring more people onto the team or there's different things, decisions to be made, that if Kira makes a decision or I make a decision, we both trust it and that's the way to go forward. And we feel, I need to speak to Kira about that. You stop and you don't do it. So you had to kind of relearn my point.
Yeah, exactly. No, that didn't come naturally at all. There was a lot of conflict that arose before we found the resolution to this conflict. But I think that's the only way to keep it.
I'm generally wrong. That's kind of the way we resolve it.
I think you find a way to resolve conflict, then you're golden. Yeah. As long as you don't have too much, you don't want to be constantly resolving. But I think that's how you.
Oh, we know our spaces. You know.
Yeah,
you know
I'm not gonna come in and be like, I think we should triple the tech spend because.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
How did you come to that? Like, because you see a lot of co-founders, and the dispute becomes a massive schism, and they end up leaving the business. So how did you, like, did you just naturally fall into your roles, or did you sit down and go, right, I'm going to take this, this, and this. You take this, this, and this.
I think our skill sets dictated that a lot in terms of like I would definitely be the more marketing creative side, sales, speaking to people. And obviously you can tell he's a salesperson as well. But I mean, the more salespeople, the better. That's not really something that you'd ever conflict over. But he's you're very strategic, focused. You're very good at like the fiscal end of it. Yeah, you're very good at the fiscal end of it.
I'll clip this bit for you and send it to you. You can play it there. And those down days, you can play this bit.
The fiscal end of it. So I think it kind of just...
It fell into it.
Like, obviously, there was bits and pieces there where actually, you know, we need to come to each other and be like, oh, you actually need to take on more when it comes to the finances. You need to be more in touch with them, things like that. But I think in terms of it was our skill sets, which I think a lot of co-founders... If you're bringing the exact same skill set, that's when you're going to have a lot of conflict because you're both going to be trying to do the same thing in a different way.
Hmm. That's needed. You can't, like, if you look at some of these brands out there and it's just, you could have two or three co-founders and two of them are very non-existent, the media side. Some people, then you have three that want to be in. Whereas I think because there's two of us, you can kind of have two people on, example here.
Yeah.
It kind of, again, we complement each other, but when you have two or three people who are very similar personalities, it can become quite conflicting quite quickly. Yeah. So who's the CEO?
Yeah.
And I don't personally like the whole co-CEO thing. And again, I'd be happy to let Kira be the CEO, but it's just one person leads the charge. That's really the way I see it. And you listen to their advisory network then after that.
Yeah, I agree. Actually, I think a lot of it is, this happens with co-vendors, is a lot of it's ego. And a lot of it, like,
knocked out of us fairly quickly.
Exactly. Yeah, well, no ego left now. But basically... Yeah, so like I didn't have any issue with him being CEO. He had the skill set for it. But I get like a lot of people, you know, you founded a business and you're not the CEO of it. It can hurt. But I think that's all in the end. It's ego. Like, I mean, I'll be building the decks for investment. I'll be pitching with you and doing everything. But like, I'm more than happy for you and your skill sets to be the CEO or for you to run this meeting because that's how the meeting's going to go the best. So I think if your ego's not in it, it's a lot easier.
Comes back to your trusting as well. Exactly, like you've infinite trust in each other. So yeah, like there's no kind of like, oh, I wonder what they're up to.
Not gonna go rogue in this meeting and be like, oh yeah, by the way, Kira's leaving next
month. Yeah. Okay. And what's the future then? Like bring me through, like obviously you're very rapidly scaling, you're at a very quick pace. Like bring me through the next 6 to 12 months.
We obviously within the next couple of months we're gonna be raising additional capital as well to keep this thing moving forward. But I guess we're looking to kind of expand out the product line based on why generate new customers when you have customers at hand, or you've got partnerships that can create customers quite easily. The legislation in the UK is creating a significant opportunity. And yes, there is competition in the market, but that competition is blue ocean at this stage, in our opinion. There's a massive, there's enough space for everyone to breathe in right now. So no one's stepping on each other's toes, which is good. And we know the competition quite well, I guess, personally. Some good reasons, some bad reasons. We'll leave that for another day. But the reality is, yeah, so scale into the UK and then a third country by the end of the summer, because this is an international problem. And it's not necessarily based just around tipping. There's inherent value in every single aspect of the business that we're creating. So onboarding the business, onboarding the employee, everything has to do with that.
Perfect. Going to do a quick fire round. So we'll do one question and I'll get you both to answer. Kira, start with you. What book would you recommend every entrepreneur wants to read?
Working Hard or Hardly Working by Grace Beverly. It's not very, it's not inspirational, but it's very helpful technique.
She is phenomenal.
She is phenomenal.
She is a machine.
She is. Oh, she is someone like that would be on the bucket list to meet.
She's on the pod bucket list as well. Definitely want to get her on in the next couple of years. She's, incredible business.
She's incredible, yeah. I watched her before her businesses as well when she was just doing social media. She's brilliant.
Incredible at social media. Yeah, how she does social media is a masterclass and just good marketing.
She's brilliant.
James?
Probably the economics and money. But I think from our point of view,
we don't. Two very different answers there.
I don't read a lot personally. I don't really like reading books. Like we're actually just after finishing college, but I am. Kira, listen, you got one more year. But like you just don't get time. But yeah, economics and money. I don't know who is by, but I read it a couple of years ago and it was just a really good way of understanding the cycles we all go through within financial services and I guess history itself.
Okay. What's the biggest thing you've learned about yourself since starting the business?
Probably that I'm a lot more resilient than I thought I would be. So if you had told me when we started the business, oh, you're going to go through this in a year, I'd have been like, okay, well, then I definitely would have given up and I would have left. So there's no chance I would stick through that. But then you do. You're a lot more resilient than you think you are, which I think is a huge learning for entrepreneurs.
Okay. James?
Be less impatient and trust the process, because I'm incredibly impatient.
This is true.
Okay. Good self-awareness and fairness. What valuable business is no one building? You're not meant to give it away that you know already what the questions are.
You go first.
probably, like, I think there's a lot of cool AI businesses out there. I wouldn't necessarily invest in it just yet. I want to see what happens next. But from my point of view, hydrogen fuel networks. I think when you look at what the world is doing now, electric cars are being smashed. Petrol and diesel isn't the way forward. And there's nobody seems to be building out a hydrogen fuel network, which is, in my opinion, the future.
Okay.
Just off the cuff, I wouldn't have heard that question.
Oh, yeah. Clearly just come up with that right now. Kira, what would you do today if I give you 10 million euro?
And I can't invest in just a...
Everyone says that. We'll take that as a given, right? You'd put 9.5 in just tip.
So what would I do with it in just tip?
No, what would you do with... If I gave you 10 million today, what would you do with it?
I would invest in the startups, some startups in Ireland, I'd say. The startup network in Ireland is phenomenal.
Anyone in particular?
Yeah, Riley. Have you heard of them?
Yes, they've been on the pod.
Have they?
Yeah.
They have. Brilliant.
Which you knew from the research we did.
I know,
Kira, you're showing up. You haven't listened to every single episode. In fairness, they were back. Oh, Riley were on probably episode 150 maybe. So.
Wow. Okay, yeah.
There's homework for today.
Yeah, I'll go watch it now. I think they're like the messaging, their business is really brilliant as well as there's a lot behind that I really agree with the messaging in their business. So I wouldn't give them maybe the whole 10 mil, but I'd give them a good bit.
They're great marketers as well. Super
they're
marketers.
Brilliant. Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant. James.
Start planning for the future, I guess. Diversify it out.
Like, I'm going to need more specifics than again, that, James.
Yeah. Look, so you invest in some of it in the startup, you put some in the stock market. I put money into it. Right now, money into stable things, oil, gold, things like that. So yeah, I wouldn't necessarily start throwing the money around, essentially.
You're definitely the finance brain.
I'm like, give it away.
Kira, what's something in your daily routine you wish had started sooner?
This is going to sound silly, but sleeping. Because when you're in that hustle mind space, which isn't a great place to be necessarily, you're like, oh, I'll just stay up late and do it tonight. And then you're up till 2 or 3 doing it. And
you still do that.
Yeah.
This is the and idealized then, version, James.
Trying to be inspirational. And then you're up at 6 the next day. And like you actually do not work the same as if you had gone to sleep. So most days, sleep.
See, he ratted you out there. Yeah. James, what about you?
Eat.
Yeah, you did. You went through a phase.
Yeah. You kind of just
went through a phase of not eating.
No, you just kind of go meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting, and then coffee, and then you end up just falling apart. Like, so it's taking care of yourself and understanding that you have a body clock that you need to take care of.
Okay.
You get one way around. That's it.
Yeah. You've kind of answered this one already here, but if I give you €1 million today, you can only invest it in one company or one person. Who would it be?
Probably go with Riley again. Yeah. I really like what the company stands for and all the work they do, as well as I think Mark, obviously from marketing background, I'm like, yeah, their marketing is amazing.
They're on the money. They're great people as well. Yeah. James?
I put some of it into Coda. I like what Luke's doing there. I think that's, again, with the law passing, it's got to go through, the government the next couple of weeks or months. It's a need. A pension is needed by everyone. And obviously there's a massive other side to that business as well.
Mm-hmm. If you start a new company in the morning, what would it be?
Something to do with the kind of sustainability and fashion side of it. I know sustainability is very much a buzzword, but when it comes to, I'd be a lot more the creative side with a bit of strategy. So I'd say somewhere there, maybe even on the logistics side of the whole end-to-end, how it's made, everything like that. So probably something in that space, I would say, would be where I'll land eventually.
Okay.
I love payments, probably in that industry, but I think there's a massive gap in the market right now for helping low paid gig workers to do various things like collect tips, for example, but also declare tax, help them, if you're doing mixers and things like that, additional income. There's a massive opportunity to create a platform to help help additional value, basically create value.
I agree with you. I think as people, we now have ability to work anywhere and do a lot of different things. I think people will have multiple gigs/jobs. I think we're going to get into an area whereby people might have 2 or 3 different jobs simultaneously.
Yeah. And it's also like Kira's dad, like John, driving a taxi, and then we're coming from a cash-based industry to a contactless-based industry. There's he wouldn't be very tech-savvy. Neither of my mum, for example, or my grandparents, or anybody, I guess, that wouldn't have really invested into that. So there's a massive opportunity to help people like that.
Media as well. Media now is I'm doing social media on the side and I'm doing this as well.
Yeah. It's huge 9 to 5 and then 5 to 9.
Yeah, but there's a lot of this thing about let's create an entrepreneurship culture. Let's just start a new startup hub. I'm like, no, make it easier for people to earn. Make it easier for new entrepreneurs to start. Make it easier for them to pay their tax. If you make it easy, people will do it. If you make it hard, people will be like, oh, it's not worth it. Or they'll do it for cash.
There's a certain side of it where you're kind of like, I think every entrepreneur is never going to listen to the stuff I would tell them. They're still going to make the same mistakes.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of the same sort of attitude that I had. It's just, oh, I'm right.
Yeah. You're but, on. You know, these
what
pods.
What would you know?
The more time we do these pods, I think the more, and like you said earlier, the more times people hear the same message again and again and again, I think finally you can have to go, there must be something in it. What do you believe other people find strange or strongly disagree with?
I think I said it earlier, actually. I think a lot of people believe that some people, you have to be born almost with the mindset of an entrepreneur. You have to have that natural confidence. You have to have that drive. But I actually think it's a skill you can learn. I think it's something that we're not taught in school and in college or whatever. But I think it's definitely a skill and anyone can do it. So, you don't have to be born, amazing at finance or strategy to be an entrepreneur. It's a skill you learn.
I agree with you. James?
I think it's kind of jump on the back of that. We just, as such, finished college. So I've gone Dublin, Galway 3 times a week for the last. And you go over there and I'm doing a bog standard commerce degree, all the finance bros. The reality is though, there's 600 people in that course across all the streams. They're all coming out with the same piece of paper. They might have a language attached to it. I think having entrepreneurship and even just trying to start a beauty industry or a beauty product or something else, that's what I hire people on the back of.
Yes.
Like our head of operations, he ran one or two businesses during COVID. And again, it's just that entrepreneurial spark is needed. Plus, like if you're going to work in KPMG or not, there's nothing wrong with that. It's more that you've got 600 people with the exact same piece of paper. That's from one college. And you've got UCD, Cork, and they've got people coming abroad into Ireland. So I think having entrepreneurship or having something like working in a startup on your CV, it adds just the extra bit of flair or whatever the word is to your CV.
1,000%. Even if it hasn't been a successful business.
Complete failure.
The fact you've tried.
Yeah,
complete failure. Because then you understand, you understand what you two are going through. When people say to me, oh, I've just applied for loads of jobs and not getting any replies. I'm like, have you done anything apart from send your CV?
Did you chase as a CEO? Have you connected on LinkedIn? Have you rang the company?
I always say, do something extra. Do a little project or do a free piece of work that you send to them going, I've seen this problem for you. Here's a solution.
We have one guy.
Zero has done it.
Yeah. We have one guy in UCD that found a spelling mistake on our website.
Yeah, I know. It's really humbled me, honestly.
Like, marketing.
That's brilliant, though. Like, it's just, okay, that guy's not on the ball.
But it's just the extra 5%, yeah. The extra 10%. It's not saying, like, redesign the app. I'm just saying, do the extra piece. In your personal life, what's one thing you spend money on? This should be an easy question for you. What's one thing you spend money on that brings you immense happiness?
Clothes or coffee. But probably every day, coffee.
What's your coffee of choice?
Oat milk flat white. I think I drink about 7 or 8 a day.
Where's your favorite coffee?
Where?
Yeah.
I don't know if we can say that. We have too many coffee shop customers.
Oh, fair enough.
I love Mr. Magpie coffee.
It is excellent.
Yes, I love this.
I agree. Yep. What about you?
Yeah, probably food, actually, this stage. I just love my food. Food and obviously then, like, as you progress, you got to make sure you're... If you do sell the business or it gets to a certain valuation, you create value that you can then liquidate. You want to be around for that. You know, you don't want to be dead at 50. So health as well.
Mm.
So getting back in the gym, getting running, things like that.
Mm, that's why I talk about body, business, and brain on the pod. The three things, I think they're all interlinked. I think for too long we focused on business. Mm. Business, business, business. I've spoken to so many successful founders and they have their exit and they're like miserable. Yeah. They're unhealthy.
Burn the relationships.
Mental health is poor. I'm like, what's the point? No. What's the point otherwise? Like, okay, final question. What's the one sentence or one piece of advice you give to every founder listening or every aspiring founder?
Generic, but don't give up. I mean, you're gonna get 100 no's and then maybe one yes, or maybe 1,000 no's and one yes, but don't give up. You may have to pivot, you may have to change a bit, but if you want to be an entrepreneur and you want to own your own business, you can do it. Just don't give up.
You know, that's so generic.
It is quite generic.
Well, it's your story. Yeah. In fairness, I'll accept it. If you hadn't said generic, I'll edit out generic.
Okay.
But it's your story. Your story is about resilience, right? Your story is about just gritting your teeth and getting on with it.
You're not guaranteed like tomorrow. So to a certain extent, you're not guaranteed that you're going to live forever. So just find something that you love and then integrate it to your life and just, I don't know, romanticize life, because you don't get to go around again. And I really don't care what people think anymore. It's just throw the earphones in, walk down the street. You're the main character. Just this has to be your life. And if you fail, get back up again. Like, business is not the start and end of your life. It's definitely something that's attached to your image, and that's what we found. But that said, businesses can fail. You don't, you know, your life is your life, and there's no point attaching it to that. So yeah, enjoy your life.
Mm, love that. It's a great way to learn. I think as young founders, you've got remarkable self-awareness already. It's really, really cool.
Thank you.
Where can people learn more about yourselves and JustTip?
Over to marketing.
www.justtip.net or on any of our socials, as well as look out for the hashtag Hot People Leave Tips.
Oh, new marketing campaign incoming. And then on socials, where's the best place to follow you?
So Instagram would be justtip_official, and TikTok would probably be a good place to follow the actual journey, which would be justtip_official.
We'll find you. TikTok's hard one to find.
From a finance point of view, if you want to follow me on Xero or SoloNet, you know, we're on there.
I thought Xero is an accounting platform.
It's a joke.
Finance joke.
There we go. People aren't funny.
No. Kira, James, thank you so much. That was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, please hit subscribe on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts, as it really does help the podcast grow and reach new people. If you want to learn more about the podcast, go to mrgaryfox.com. I'll see you back here in a couple of days for a brand new episode.